You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
It's a five-year-old kid in Sunday school. Crayons are out, coloring things are out. He's doing a drawing. Sunday school teacher says, "What are you drawing, Jimmy?" Jimmy says, "I'm drawing a picture of God." The teacher says, Don't be ridiculous, Jimmy. Nobody knows what God looks like." Jimmy says, "They will when I finish my picture." Unitarians often get asked a tricky, sticky question by those seeking to understand who we are and what sort of church this is and what we believe in as a movement. If you have any public life outside this church, you can't avoid the question. It will get asked of you eventually by someone, and it's this: do Unitarians believe in God? If you've been paying any attention at all, particularly around the Torta anniversary observances, you would know that there is one and only one right answer to this question: do Unitarians believe in God? You ready? If they want to, that is the one and only right answer. The Unitarian Universalist impulse and direction is toward spiritual freedom. The impulse to the free and responsible search for truth and meaning, which is our fourth Unitarian Universalist principle, which is in our Constitution and church rules, as well as on our door. The word God is a kind of shorthand for ultimate meaning, a word that has had some pretty bad public relations and become loaded with lots of unhelpful baggage over the centuries. So much so that for some of us, it can sit awkwardly in the mouth and taste not like biscuits, but like bitter ashes. Have you all got biscuits, by the way? Did that happen? Oh, good. Thank you, Joe. So progressive theology in the last century has tried to be helpful in decoding and defusing this loaded shorthand word, God, by offering lots of tasty, crunchy, chewy, mouthfilly, creamy substitutes for the word God. Ground of being. Source of life. That which is greater than all yet present in each, and so on. You can look these up. It is both freeing and responsible for a church to actually talk openly about the idea of God every once in a while. Call me old-fashioned. Of course, talking about the idea of God is different from talking about God, and I can't say that I've ever been that confident to talk about God like I know the thing for sure. I'm a minister of religion with a graduate degree in theology, and all I really have is a mix of the curated words of others and personal subjective experiences to weigh those words against. But it's unhelpful for us that there is a kind of conspiracy of silence about this among Unitarians, because that insecurity won't help us reach people who, just like us, are seeking both roots and wings for their spirits. There are pretty much only two ways to seek any sort of truth and meaning: deduction and induction, where you proceed top down from a higher authority like the Bible or the authority of the Pope and interpret or adjust your views according to those ideas. That's conventional theology. And then there's induction, which is where you start from your experience, construct and adjust provisional ideas about your experience. And that is called contextual theology, which is closer to Unitarianism. Both of these ways of constructing truth and meaning have their place. A responsible search though, for truth and meaning means you accept the need to examine your own necessarily limited ideas and experiences in light of new, potentially challenging ideas and experiences that come from outside you, or I dare say, perhaps even above your current scope. Anything less than accepting this responsibility is not freedom, but bondage, and bondage by the worst of chains, smug self-assurance, which only defends itself and rejects invitations for growth. And we wouldn't want that. So today, to the extent this cafe format allows, we're importing some techniques from Lectio Divina to titillate palates that may have become jaded by ruminating upon, and that literally means chewing over. That's why the biscuits are so important for this. Chewing over some contemporary offerings of ideas and experiences of God. These offerings represent some of the current progressive theologies I've come across in recent years. Think of what's on your tables as a degustation sharing platter of things I and others have found not only tasty, but agreeably bite-sized. And these are not offerings from zealous idiots or uninformed louts. They are from smart people who think deeply and profoundly about such things. Scientists, philosophers, theologians, artists, scholars, and the occasional minister. So I call, first of all, for a little respect. Respect that these are offered freely to widen and extend your search for truth and meaning, and respect for the thinkers themselves. I have in mind a collaborative approach at your tables where we develop a spirit of listening and acceptance that this stuff is varied and more of it than we think. Here's how I'd like it to go. There are a few slips on your tables that were preset there. I think I put 4 or 5 on. Try to read each one silently or aloud as a table, if you like. More than once, maybe, for clarity. Take a comment from each member. You only get 3 choices here. Yes, no, or interesting. It's the ones that most people find the most interesting. Interesting is where yes and no kind of meet. Like, I don't know about this. This is worth thinking about a little bit. Now, finding as a table the most interesting one is not an endorsement or an affirmation, just that many of you went, okay. So that's a first step. Then unpack, as a group, what thoughts, feelings, or personal experiences this one that you found interesting prompts. Share the time, listen to each other, don't interrupt one another, and do not debate. Speak to your experiences and don't comment on the experiences of other people. This is mere civility. Try to avoid binaries like, I agree, I disagree. I like, I know like, it's true, it's false. Just try to steer between those poles. And certainly resist the urge to prevail over others and the urge to prove yourself superior to the reading. I'm afraid that's a pretty Unitarian reflex. If it just holds still long enough, I can find what's wrong with it. One person prepare to share both the chosen reading, the one that you've, as a table, decided is interesting, and a few reactions, not comprehensively, just a few reactions from the group. Now, there's one caveat. If you don't find any of the readings interesting, if you can't come to some sort of consensus in about 5-10 minutes, I have more. So just put your hand up. And also, if you have a question, put your hand up. That's it. But before we start, there is a couple of things I'd like to mention. Unitarians are many things, but I do not think that we are nihilists. Nihilism is the view that nothing means anything. We seem to be both anchored and freed by a sense of something larger, that there's more going on than atoms, space, and opinions, that, as Democritus said. This sense of something larger is expressed in a Unitarian song that qualifies as our anthem, if anything does. It is sung at the outset of services the world over and used to be sung at the outset of services here. I'm thinking of bringing it back. May it sanctify and fructify our talks together today. I'll ask Neil to play it through once and we'll sing it together.
Thank you.
In that spirit, off we go. Enjoy. I'll give you about 20 minutes.
Morning. This is our group's choice. It's by John Dowie. Would you like us to read it out? Okay. Perhaps the only certainty is that much of religion is wrong. Does that mean that it would be wise to abandon the whole business? Some people think so. There's a lot of errors and superstition and bigotry that would be better discarded, but peeling this onion doesn't reveal a void at the core. Here dwells a vital sprout, living, mysterious, and wonderful. Here, I think, is what draws us to religion: astonishment at what we are a part of and awe at what must lie behind it. So this is the one that got three interestings and four yeses, if you're interested in that. And some collected musings. Religion, no matter what, has a very important place in the world, as it encourages people to look at themselves in a deeper way, and all religions speak of love. Religion makes us reflect on the meaning of life and our role in it. It connects people. Religion is wrong if it tells us what to think. It's better if it encourages free thought.
Did any other table have John Dowie's reading? Okay, in case you're wondering who John Dowie is, it's also the Victoria Square Fountain and other public art around Australia. Who would like to go next? We're just going to probably take a few of these. If you're really keen to share, please put your hand up. Don't be shy.
Hello. Well, our group came out simpatico to Alan Watts and Einstein. Alan Watts being about faith is a state of openness. Faith is a state of openness or trust. To have faith is to trust yourself to the water. When you swim, you don't grab hold of the water, because if you do, you'll sink and drown. Instead, you relax and float. And the attitude of faith is the very opposite of clinging to belief, of holding on. In other words, a person who is a fanatic in matters of religion and clings to certain ideas about the nature of God and the universe becomes a person who has no faith at all. Instead, they are holding tight. But the attitudes of faith is to let go and become open to truth, whatever it might turn out to be. Alan Watts.
Thank you. We had the exact same reading from Alan Watts that we chose as our most interesting one as well, so I didn't want to touch on that, but I did want to touch on that we decided at our table that the most interesting reading of all was probably this week's notices, because... because it grounds us in the here and now and in our beloved community.
I'll read ours. This is what I call the godical theory, that we are all particles of God, the life force experiencing itself through creation. If we are all particles of God, we are all one. We are all connected to each other to make up a wider whole that goes beyond nation, race, or creed. Because we are all connected in this way, we need to cooperate with each other to be the most fully ourselves and realize our divinity. The highest form of knowledge, then, is empathy. When you can put yourself in someone else's shoes and experience the world from their viewpoint. If we are all particles of God, we each have the potential to be extraordinary creators with the power to shape the world based on our vision of how we want the world to be. Finally, as with cells in a body, each particle has its own unique role and function within the whole. Thus, we all have a divine calling in this life. Vision, majority of us took that as being interesting, and we had quite a lengthy discussion about the word God.
Well, we took the instructions seriously to pick one that we didn't all agree on or disagree on. And it's also a little bit hard to understand, which is part of why we thought it was so interesting, because we would need to think about it a lot longer. But I'll just read it out to you and see, so you can see what you think. Situated at the split between theism and atheism, we now have the opportunity to respond in deeper, freer ways to things we cannot fathom or prove. This condition is called anatheos, or God after God, a moment of creative not knowing that signifies a break with former sureties and invites us to forge new meanings from the most ancient of wisdoms. Anatheism refers to an inaugural event that lies at the heart of every great religion, a wager between hospitality and hostility to the stranger, the other, the sense of something more. By analyzing the roots of our own anatheistic moment, a return to God is possible for those who seek it, but also how a more liberating faith can be born. Accepting that we can never be sure about God is the only way to rediscover a hidden holiness in life and to reclaim an everyday divinity. So we had a lot to say about that.
As three youngsters, we all agreed, whereas the adults said that it was kind of interesting. When people tell me they don't believe in God, I say, tell more about the God you don't believe in. I probably don't believe in him either. God is not God's name. God is our name, for that which is greater than all and yet present in each. Call it what you will, spirit, ground of being, life itself. It remains what it always has, an awe-inspiring, mind-bending mystery. Dr. Forrest Church.
We talked about a few different things. I have some notes here. Well, apparently carries notes around, so that's pretty good. So the first note was, mystery is a massive move away from conventional theology, and so we thought that this quote really had a lot to do with that, I suppose. Another thing that we talked about was, just because you put a plum jam label on Vegemite doesn't turn it into plum jam. Okay, I suppose that we take that to mean labels are inconsequential. We also like the what God you don't believe in and the subjectiveness of it all, because it is very subjective.
This one got a yes, a no, and three interestings. It's quite long, but it's very simple. In a mother's womb were two babies. One asked the other, do you believe in life after delivery? The other replied, why, of course. There has to be something after delivery. Maybe we are here to prepare ourselves for what will be later. Nonsense, said the first. There is no life after delivery. What kind of life would that be? The second said, I don't know, but there will be more light than here. Maybe we will walk with our legs and eat from our mouths. Maybe we will have other senses that we can't understand now. The first replied, that is absurd. Walking is impossible, and eating with our mouths? Ridiculous. The umbilical cord supplies nutrition and everything we need. But it is so short. Life after delivery is to be logically excluded. The second insisted, well, I think there's something, and maybe it's different than it is here. Maybe we don't need this physical cord anymore. The first replied, nonsense. And moreover, if there is life, then why has no one ever come back from there? Delivery is the end of life, and in the after delivery, there is nothing but darkness and silence and oblivion. It takes us nowhere. Well, I don't know, said the second, but certainly we will meet Mother, and she will take care of us. The first replied, Mother? You actually believe in Mother? That's laughable. If Mother exists, then where is she now? The second said, she is all around us. We are surrounded by her. We are of her. It is in her that we live. Without her, this world would not and could not exist. Said the first, well, I don't see her, so it is only logical that she doesn't exist. To which the second replied, Sometimes, when you're in silence and you focus and you really listen, you can perceive her presence and you can hear her loving voice calling down from above. This is by Dr. Wayne Dyer, and we consider it quite sweet.
I'm so glad someone decided to read that as a close to the sharing. Yeah, thank you for leaving us with that. Is there a point to all this beyond just throwing some new ideas out there is always a good idea, but two meta thoughts, one ancient, one modern, just to go away with. Our slick, urban, mediatized culture encourages us to think about God far too easily and glibly. So it's small wonder it's become problematic for people to talk about. We talk about him like he's some consumer good we've reduced to a discussion of binary choices, buying or not buying, yes or no, like it or don't like it, hit or miss. Conventional talk about God is as though he was like some sort of boss. We ask him to bless the country, save the queen, from what? Give us good weather for the cricket, to be on our side in an election or a war, even though our opponents are also theoretically God's children somehow. But God talk wasn't always this simple and binary. World religion scholar Karen Armstrong reminds us of an ancient practice called the Ramaja retreat, whereby Hindu priests tried to hone and clarify their perceptions of Brahman, the ultimate reality that lay beyond their many, many gods. This is 10 centuries before Christ and 5 centuries before Buddha. Hindu priests would go out into the forest on a retreat to put themselves into a frame of mind, a special frame of mind. They understood that you can't talk about God or Brahman in the same way you would have an argument with a colleague or discuss a point of law or debate politics or negotiate business. Divine talk requires a receptive frame of mind, like the frame of mind we use to approach music. And by the way, that is a real neurological brain state you can detect and measure. When they came back, one of them would kick off and give a description of Brahman. And he would pour into this definition all that he could think, all his knowledge and his insight, and he worked out a verbal formula, puzzling, elusive, and difficult, which, after all, does describe what Brahman is, puzzling, elusive, difficult. But then his fellows would then have to build on that and respond to him and so on and so forth. Guess how they determined the best description? The winning description was the one that reduced everyone to silence. And in that silence, the Brahman was more than described, the Brahman was present. The Brahman was not present in the definitions, it was present only in the stunning realization of the impotence of speech. But it is only after exhausting speech that such a presence can be truly appreciated. Subsequent religious practices discovered, too, that when we talk about God, we're kind of at the end of what words and ideas can do. So at your tables, in your groups, what was the quality of your listening? Was there silence in you, in others? Did you struggle to accept the experiences of others or not? Did you come to value them as true and perhaps sacred to them? So the point of today is it's not so much of the content of the slips of paper that I gave you, as the spirit of seeing the divine shine in others, all others, even and especially those you don't agree with or even like or even know. And that may be the essence of what Unitarian spirituality is about. I have a UK colleague named Stephen Lingwood who's young and sharp and committed, and he puts it like this.
It could sound a little bit flippant. Unitarian ministers will often talk about God in a Unitarian service, but it's very much in the context of things to consider and, if appropriate, reject, rather than trying to impose a particular view on somebody. Many Unitarian ministers will have quite conventional views on God, others won't. And here's one with a view which some people might find challenging, but it's a good example of a Unitarian view to make you think about something in a different way.
In the Hindu tradition, there's this story of the god Krishna talking to Arjuna. And Krishna says, I want to show you something, and says to Arjuna, what do you see here? And Arjuna sees a vine of grapes. And he says that to Krishna. And Krishna says, look more closely. And Arjuna looks closer and sees each grape is Krishna, and the vine of grapes is Krishna. And that story from the Hindu tradition to me is actually what the Unitarian faith is about, what Unitarian spirituality is, which is seeing God in everything, realizing that unity, that oneness with everything, realizing that Jesus is divine and you are divine and I am divine and all actually is divine. And Unitarian spirituality, I think, is the practice of seeing that, of realizing that, of feeling it, of experiencing that sense of divinity in everything through song, through meditation, through prayer.
And through action?
The challenging bit is to see God in people, is to see God in the stranger, is to see God in those in need, is to see God in even those people we don't like. That's the challenge, and that's the lifetime practice, I think, of Unitarianism, is practicing, and it does take a lifetime, seeing God in others and acknowledging that sacredness in all that we do, in service, in charity, in social justice work, acknowledging the sacredness of every person.
So that's my colleague, Stephen Lingwood in the UK, who I've got a lot of time for. So the point, the real work of today was not didactic. It was not to impart new information into you, as though you need more information in the information age. The work of today was to be with each other in our grapplings with the ultimate and persistent human mystery called God, and to listen without judgment, to bear each other up in that free and responsible search for it, to see in each other the divine undertaking being played out, and to listen. And when you learn to listen and accept, you find the fundamental spiritual practice of Lectio Divina, that listening and loving are closely related. So it is, and so it may be for all of us. Amen. Let us join together in singing our closing hymn, When Our Heart Is in a Holy Place. May your heart be in a holy place this week. May you bless today's conversations to our use and us to the service of that which is good. Amen, and have a great week.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitariansa@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.